2 Samuel chapter 24, and we're starting at verse 18. On that day, Gad went to David and said to him, "Go up and build an altar to the Lord on the threshing floor of Araunah the Jebusite." So David went up, as the Lord had commanded through Gad. When Araunah looked and saw the king and his officials coming towards him, he went out and bowed down before the king with his face to the ground. Araunah said, "Why has my lord the king come to his servant?" "To buy your threshing floor," David answered, "so that I can build an altar to the Lord, that the plague on the people may be stopped." Araunah said to David, "Let my lord the king take whatever he wishes and offer it up. Here are oxen for the burnt offering, and here are threshing sledges and ox yokes for the wood. Your majesty, Araunah gives all this to the king." Araunah also said to him, "May the Lord your God accept you." But the king replied to Araunah, "No, I insist on paying you for it. I will not sacrifice to the Lord my God burnt offerings that cost me nothing." So David bought the threshing floor and the oxen and paid 50 shekels of silver for them. David built an altar to the Lord there and sacrificed burnt offerings and fellowship offerings. Then the Lord answered his prayer on behalf of the land, and the plague on Israel was stopped.
Please do keep that open in front of you. We're going to look at those words together. Thank you very much for reading them. Here's the title, Natural Disasters. Some tragedies don't seem to be natural disasters. Some tragedies do seem to be our fault. A lot of people have said that the Grenfell Tower fire never should have happened in a modern wealthy city. We understand, I think, and we appreciate why people would feel very, very angry about that, especially those most closely affected. It's hard to know who to be angry with. Some are angry with the local council authorities, with the fire authorities, with the builders, with the national government, with the taxpayer, perhaps with everyone. But other tragedies, it's harder to see how we would blame human beings for that. We describe them as natural disasters. I remember being very shocked on Boxing Day 2004 to see on the news that a massive tsunami, a huge supersized wave, had hit towns and cities all around the Indian Ocean. In the end, it was thought that the number of people killed was something like 250,000 people. Very suddenly, all at much the same moment. In April 2015, more recently, an earthquake in Nepal killed 9,000 people and injured around 22,000 people. Or you might remember the long and tragic spread of the Ebola virus across several countries in West Africa, 28,000 people infected by that. And sometimes we're left with no one to be angry with, no one to blame, no human being. And so people blame God. They feel angry with God. Or if they don't blame him, they start to doubt him, to doubt his goodness, perhaps, or to doubt his power, or to doubt his existence at all. Well, the Bible has plenty to say about these issues. There's no issue that isn't addressed by the Bible. It doesn't duck or avoid things or pretend that we live in a comfortable, easy world where things are always nice. Far from it. Today's Bible reading includes a plague, a disease that spreads and kills 70,000 people. It's a natural disaster on a huge scale. And it gets us to face up to truth that I think most of us, certainly that I would rather ignore and rather avoid, but here it is for us in the Bible. And the Bible reading tells us, first of all, that the Lord's wrath, the Lord's anger, is the true problem, the real underlying problem. In other words, all the trouble, all the tragedy in this world comes down to one thing. Behind it all is the problem that humanity has rejected God, disobeyed God, ignored God, and because of that, our relationship with God is broken, and we are living in a very broken world, a fallen world, a suffering world. a world that the Bible describes as being under the judgment of God. Not just us as human beings, but the whole of nature is broken and affected by that. And that problem is raised right at the very start of our Bible reading in the first few words. So have a look at it with me. Chapter 24, verse 1, 2 Samuel. Again, the anger of the Lord burned against Israel. Again, you know that first word is telling. Again, this is not new. This is the big problem of the story of David's reign that has been going on all the way through to Samuel. He is unable himself to resolve this problem. The Lord's anger burns against Israel. It's underlined as we get to this conclusion to his life story, these final chapters. The problem of the Lord's wrath is underlined in the first and the last of six little readings that we've been looking at. The Lord's anger burns. Now, part of that anger, part of that judgment is to hand us over to the sins of our leaders, to put in charge of us people who are just like us, people who are also sinful and also disobeying God and deserving of his anger. And so we read these quite surprising words. The Lord's anger burned against Israel, and, verse 1, he incited David against them, against Israel, saying, go and take a census of Israel and Judah. That's puzzling, isn't it? The Lord incited David to do something wrong, something harmful for Israel. Now, when this story is told the second time in the Bible, when it's told in Chronicles, we read there that it is Satan who tempted David to do wrong. And that is also true. That is another way of looking at it. But we need to understand that when Satan is permitted to tempt and to bring about harm, it is always under God's authority and for God's purposes. So Romans 8 tells us that all things, good and bad, all things happen for the good of those who love God. Genesis 50 tells us that what we intend for evil, God intends for good. So Satan tempts, David sins, but the Lord has a purpose, a plan. It's not clear what that plan is. Perhaps it's in his anger, it's to make sin more obvious to everyone. Perhaps it's to lead David and the nation to a point of repentance and forgiveness. We're not told whether that is the case or not. But this thing that David wants to do now, to take a census of Israel and Judah, it seems to be a very, very wicked thing. Verse 2, so the king said to Joab and the army commanders with him, go throughout the tribes of Israel from Dan to Beersheba and enroll the fighting men so that I may know how many there are. But Joab replied to the king, may the Lord your God multiply the troops 100 times over, and may the eyes of my lord the king see it. But why does my lord the king want to do such a thing? Why would you want to do such a wicked thing as to count up all the armies like this? Now, Joab comes up a lot in David's story. If you know the story of David in the Bible, you will have heard of Joab. You will know that he doesn't have a sensitive conscience. You might question whether he has a conscience at all. He is ruthless. He's a kind of mafia character. He shoots first and asks questions later. If you have a difficulty in your life and you would quite like somebody to be secretly stabbed or quietly dragged behind a bush and slowly strangled, then Joab is your man. He'll be happy to volunteer. So long as he sees some benefit or some advantage, he won't hesitate. And yet, even Joab thinks that this might just be a little bit too wicked. He actually refuses to do it because he is worried about how serious an offence this is. And he has to be forced. He has to be overruled. David's in charge and David overrules him. Verse 4. The king's word, however, overruled Joab and the army commanders. So they left the presence of the king to enroll the fighting men of Israel. So off they go. Joab and the army commanders, it must have been a bit scary to have them turn up in your town. They go around one by one. They want to find out who is fit and healthy. You know, they do those army checks and they see if you can see straight and if you're fit and healthy and whether you can fight in the army. And they count up and it takes them a long time There's a lot of people to count. 799,991, 799,992, 799,993. You can see why the whole process takes them 9 months and 23 days to work out how many fighting men there are in Israel. Finally, they come back with a number. Here it is in verse 9. Joab reported the number of the fighting men to the king. In Israel, there were 800,000 able-bodied men who could handle a sword, and in Judah, 500,000. And when this information finally comes back to David, look at his reaction in verse 10. David was conscience-stricken after he had counted the fighting men, and he said to the Lord, "I have sinned greatly in what I have done. Now, Lord, I beg you, take away the guilt of your servant. I have done a very foolish thing." You see what David says? Not just I have sinned greatly. Not just I've done a foolish thing, I have done a very foolish thing. I beg you, Lord, take away my sin. Now there's a mystery here, isn't there? In fact, there are two mysteries. Why is the Lord angry with Israel in the first place in verse 1? Even before David goes off to count the fighting men, the Lord is already angry with them. Why is that? What have they done? What is so terrible that thousands of them will die in a plague? And the second mystery, what is so bad about counting up the army? After all, Moses does it twice in the book of Numbers and doesn't get in any trouble and doesn't seem to be sorry about it. It can't always be a bad thing to count the army. People have theories. People have guessed. People have tried to read between the lines and think what might have been wrong with it. But actually, the point is, the writer does not tell us. We don't know what Israel did wrong. We don't know what's so awful about David counting the fighting men. We do know that God always has reasons for his justice and his anger. We do know that the Lord is slow to anger, that he is reluctant to punish and quick to forgive, but we're left wondering and guessing, what is it? What have we done that is so terrible? And very often life leaves us wondering and questioning that too. We see the severity of the consequences of our sin. We see a world under God's judgment, and we see terrible things happening because of the wrath of God on this world. And we can't always put our finger on what exactly is it that that particular nation did or that particular person did. What is so bad about my life or his life or her life? We can't always see it. But just because we don't know what it is does not mean that we're innocent. As human beings, we are so good at excusing our sin, ignoring it, playing it down, belittling it, forgetting it. But God sees our hearts, he sees our motives, he sees all our actions. And he is angry. Sometimes the only way to get us to see it and ask for forgiveness is to provoke us into something a little bit more obvious, so that even we can see that we are under God's judgment. The Lord's wrath, then, is the true problem, the underlying problem. But then secondly, this story wants to tell us that the Lord's mercy is also the true solution, the real answer to the tragedies and difficulties of this world, is to put our faith in the mercy and kindness and love of God through Jesus. No human being can fix these things. We see it, certainly see that David isn't able to. Now, David is a good king. He by the standards of leaders, leaders in the Bible, he is one of the best. But David is not able to fix these problems, and that's what we've been learning from his reign. Have a look at verse 11. Verse 11, "Before David got up the next morning, the word of the Lord had come to Gad the prophet, David's seer. Go and tell David, this is what the Lord says. I am giving you three options. Choose one of them for me to carry out against you." So Gad went to David and said to him, "Shall there come on you 3 years of famine in your land, or 3 months of fleeing from your enemies while they pursue you, or 3 days of plague in your land? Now then, think it over and decide how I should answer the one who sent me. Do you see, this is an impossible choice to make, isn't it? All three of these choices are terrible choices. Great crimes have been committed, and we don't know what they are. And crimes need to have consequences. This is a just God, a just world. Something needs to happen. A price needs to be paid. But as a sinful human leader, David has no way of dealing with that. No good options in front of him. All he can really do in the decisions that he makes for the leadership of the country is choose. Are they going to go for the slow lane of suffering? 3 long years of food shortage and people starving? Or the medium lane of 3 months of enemy armies attacking, people running for safety? Or the fast lane of people catching a plague, an illness that is spreading quickly from person to person? How on earth could any leader make a decision about that? All of the options he has are bad options. And so perhaps we shouldn't be very surprised that David doesn't actually make a choice between those three things. He doesn't say which option he goes for. All he says is, look, I just want to plead for mercy. Verse 14, David said to Gad, I am in deep distress. Let us fall into the hands of the Lord, for his mercy is great. But do not let me fall into human hands. That is a key thought for us. Fall into the hands of the Lord, because his mercy is great. But if we fall into human hands, we're in trouble. Even David in his leadership, even a good leader, is not able to deal with this underlying problem that we all have in our relationship with God. And so we fall into his hands and we ask for his mercy. Verse 15. So the Lord sent a plague on Israel from that morning until the end of the time designated. You see, already there is a limit. Already the Lord's initiative is to designate a time when this will stop. And 70,000 of the people from Dan to Beersheba died. When the angel stretched out his hand to destroy Jerusalem, the Lord relented concerning the disaster and said to the angel who was afflicting the people, enough, withdraw your hand. The angel of the Lord was then at the threshing floor of Arona, the Jebusite. You see, the Lord takes the initiative. It's not David who takes the lead in this. It's no human being who can fix this kind of tragedy. It is the Lord who relents, the Lord who sees this judgment falling on people and says, stop. That's where it stops and no further. Now, it is understandable and human that we want to blame human beings. And we see tragedies in the world and we see difficulties in our lives and we want to find somebody who is at fault and we want to fix it. We want to find someone who can fix it, who can put it right. And when we're very distressed about it, we want to fix it ourselves and intervene and take charge of the situation. And there is some value in that. Of course there is. We need police and health services and we need politicians and we need safety regulations and all of those things are of some value, but we need to recognize that we're treating the symptoms, not the cause. There is value on a sticking plaster for a wound, but this disease is a terminal one. Sin and its consequences and the problem that we have between us and God needs a bigger solution, something that human beings cannot do for themselves. Politicians like to say they're taking tough decisions, hard decisions to deal with this problem and resolve that problem. And the reality is they're choosing between the lesser of evils. Whichever choice they make, they will continue to lead people who are living in a fallen, broken, suffering world and living with the consequences of that. And what we need is something bigger. We need the Lord's mercy. We need to fall and trust and rely not on human answers, not on ourselves, but to fall and trust and rely on the Lord's mercy, because his mercy is great, as David says. Let us fall into the hands of the Lord, for his mercy is great, but do not let me fall into human hands. The Lord's mercy is the true solution then. And finally, just from the last section, the Lord's sacrifice is the true cost. We've seen the Lord relent. We've seen the plague come to an end. But now we get a sort of flashback. We've seen the whole story, but now we sort of home in on okay, the Lord relented, the Lord showed mercy, but how? What actually happened in that moment to stop the plague? And we find that he did it by paying a price. Verse 17, when David saw the angel who was striking down the people, so this now we're still thinking about the time when people are dying of the plague, when David saw that, he said to the Lord, I have sinned, I the shepherd have done wrong. These are but sheep, what have they done? Let your hand fall on me and my family. David says, look, this is my fault. The census was my idea. Don't blame them. It should be me that pays the price for this and not them. I'm the guilty one. Now, we as readers, we know that is not true. We know actually from verse 1 that the Lord was angry with Israel before David did anything about counting up the armies. But he does have a point that the price does need to be paid for this sin and for this crime. And as the leader, he is taking responsibility and saying, let it fall on me and my house. Let me pay the price. And then verse 18, on that day, Gad went to David and said to him, go up and build an altar to the Lord on the threshing floor of Araunah the Jebusite. On that day, verse 18, on that day and in that place, it's the same farm. It's the same building in that farm where the plague stops. At that moment, that's where David goes. Maybe you can imagine it on the news, the story of this plague spreading around Israel. You can imagine these days they'd have a sort of big map, wouldn't they? Town by town, village by village, turning red as new cases are reported of this fatal disease appearing in more and more places. And then finally you get to Jerusalem and it stops. The last reported case, that's it. Never goes any further. It stops there. You have the date. You have the place. What happened at that moment that stopped this disease from spreading? That's the question. You may have learnt in history about the Black Plague, the Black Death in the Middle Ages, spreading right across Europe. There's a spread of how it, a map of how it spread year by year, reaching more and more places. You know, they used to isolate towns. No one was allowed in or out so that the plague might not spread from there to the next town. And people would bring food to the gate of the town and then leave again so that they wouldn't catch this terrible disease as it spread. Something like a third of people in Europe died during those years or caught that plague. Or a sort of modern equivalent version, the new movie, the fictional version, Nothing Spreads Like Fear. Contagion there with people taking this new deadly experimental disease from place to place as they travel around the world and fly from one place to another and the whole world panics. But all of that comes to a stop. It comes to a halt on a particular day at a particular place because a sacrifice is offered. Because an altar is built. Instead of burning up the people, God's anger burns up a substitute, an alternative, a thing of great value, a life for a life. Let me read from verse 19. So David went up as the Lord had commanded through Gad. When Araunah looked and saw the king and his officials coming towards him, he went out and bowed down before the king with his face to the ground. Araunah said, why has my lord the king come to this his servant? To buy your threshing floor, David answered, so that I can build an altar to the Lord, that the plague on the people may be stopped. Araunah said to David, let my lord the king take whatever he wishes and offer it up. Here are oxen for the burnt offering. Here are the threshing sledges and ox yokes for the wood. Your majesty, Araunah gives all this to the king. Araunah also said to him, may the Lord your God accept you. But the king replied to Araunah, no, I insist on paying for it. I will not sacrifice to the Lord my God burnt offerings that cost me nothing. You see, David just wants to buy the whole place, the particular building. He wants to buy it. He wants to pay the price for all of the sacrifices to be made to God. And this guy, he's a loyal citizen. He is worried about the plague spreading across the nation. He wants to do his bit. He says, no, you don't pay me any money. Just have it. You know, this is going to help save people's lives. Have everything. And I just hope that God accepts your offering and that the disease is stopped. But David says, no, I won't offer a sacrifice that costs me nothing. He knows as a leader that he has to take responsibility for these people and pay the price for their guilt to be forgiven. Verse 24, the king replied to Araunah, "No, I insist on paying you for it. I will not sacrifice to the Lord my God burnt offerings that cost me nothing." So David bought the threshing floor and the oxen and paid 50 shekels of silver for them. David built an altar to the Lord there and sacrificed burnt offerings and fellowship offerings. Then the Lord answered his prayer on behalf of the land, and the plague on Israel was stopped. David pays good money. He offers a good sacrifice. The animal is sort of barbecued. The meat is barbecued, not to be eaten, to be burnt up as a gift to the Lord to say, look, your anger burns and that is right and that is fair. But in your kindness, in your mercy, you will accept this in place of us. Now that place is not just any place where this altar was built. It's the very place where Solomon later will build a temple and sacrifices and offerings will be offered for the nation all the way through their history so that God forgives them and shows mercy on them and hears their prayer. But those sacrifices came to an end when a final sacrifice was made. The temple came to an end when Jesus, the Lord of the universe, came into this world and said, look, I not only am I going to show you mercy, but I'm also going to pay the price. I'm going to be the sacrifice. I'm going to be burnt up by the right and fair anger of God. I would rather die and suffer than see you die and suffer and be punished for your sin. David said, these are but sheep. I'm the shepherd. Let your hand fall on me and my family, on me and the kings who will reign after me, the son of David you promised who is to reign forever. And Jesus, the son of David, comes into this world and says, I am the good shepherd. Here it is. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for his sheep. Jesus says, I will die. I will pay the price for sins. You see, our only hope in the face of tragedy and suffering in this world, our only hope is to turn to the God that we so often blame and doubt and deny. To turn to him for his love and his mercy. He is fair, he is just, and this world is in trouble with him, but he is also loving and merciful, and he's died in our place. So that we might be forgiven, so that with us, that on this day, in this place, that each of us can say a day and a place where we put our trust in Jesus Christ and received his forgiveness. You know, the plague of sin is very infectious. The disease is fatal. It takes our lives. It takes us away eternally from God. And it is approaching and it comes to us rapidly. And there is a time and a place when it stops. Because we put our trust in Jesus and the price is paid. May it stop here. May it stop today. May it stop for us. And as David says, his mercy let us fall into the hands of the Lord. His mercy is great, but do not let me fall into human hands.